The following program represents the views of the speakers and not necessarily those of KCBX. KCBX welcomes the comments of those with divergent views. It's now 1 o'clock, time for Central Coast Voices. Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a project of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX and the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo. This program is made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. Fred Monroe is hosting the program from home today amid concerns about the spread of the COVID-19 virus. Fred and his guests will be looking at disaster and wildfire preparedness. Are you prepared? With record wildfires all over the West Coast and hurricanes throughout the Gulf regions, news of the need for emergency evacuations are in the news daily. Fred's guests have spent their careers addressing these issues, and today they will share with you how you need to, what you need to do to prepare for the disasters and how we may still face this year. You're invited to listen, learn, and participate in the conversation today. You can call us at 805-549-8855 or email your questions to voices@kcbx. And with that, I'll turn it over to you, Fred.
Great, Sarah. Thank you. I appreciate being with you today, and thank you for sharing the program with us. Today, we're going to talk about something that if you haven't noticed, you've been able to rest and sleep through a good portion of the last 3 to 4 months, and that is that the level of disaster that we are looking at beyond the pandemic is indeed becoming a significant factor. This year, 6 of the 20 worst wildfires in California history are occurring this summer. Most of them started for natural causes, and we can talk about some of that also. A good portion of them, both in California and in Oregon and Washington, have required some mass evacuations, and there have been some tragic fatalities. And we want to take a look at what we can do to better prepare for that. A good portion of what we need to look at is the fact that everybody thinks that they have a good plan to handle a disaster. We're going to talk to some professional experts today about how to look at that. My guest today, Dan McGauley, who is a retired fire engineer and paramedic for the Atascadero Fire Department, and Paul Dees, who's a retired emergency management coordinator for the California Office of Emergency Services and a fire engineer paramedic from Morro Bay, retired, and they are joining us today. We want you to be part of the discussion also. You, as Sarah said, and I'll remind you, you're welcome to call in and ask questions at 805-549-8855. You can also email your questions to voices@kcbx.org, especially if you email them and they're longer questions than we can get to on the program. I will forward the emails to our guests that may be able to help you with some further information in those regards. This is about preparedness, because I will share with you, as part of my observations at this point, is a significant amount of the fatalities that have taken place already this year, while tragic, have come about by people not prepared to be able to get out of their own homes or their own areas because they felt like they had enough time or they had enough resources to basically try and wait things out. So my guests today are really experts in an understanding of what needs to be done and what happens if you don't address the needs from that standpoint. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate talking to both of you. It's not a secret. Both Dan and Paul are personal friends of mine for other hats that we wear. They've both been involved with the KCBX Live Oak Music Festival and services for that, keeping us safe and protected in that environment. And that's what's really helped us a lot to understand what we need to do to be safely at Live Oak. I'll just jump in. I guess the big question is, do people have any conception at all of what it will really take to get out of their own home? And it seems that there's a tremendous number of people who believe that it won't happen to me, or gee, if I wait till the very last minute, I'll be fine getting out of my house and down the road and everything will be hunky-dory. Gentlemen, where do we start this discussion?
Well, if it's okay, I'll start out with the idea is that things are changing. I used to practice and I used to teach, you got to be prepared. You might get a warning that you need to evacuate, you need to go, and you got a little bit of time to get going. But as we found with Paradise, California, when they had their fire, they had no notice. The fire was there right then, no warning. You either immediately left or you died. And when we think about disaster preparedness, we know there's fires in California, we know there's earthquakes, and we can be prepared, but are you prepared to leave immediately? And you need to think about, I might have to leave immediately, maybe I'm gonna have 2 or 3 hours notice, or maybe I'm on a warning because the fire is still 5 miles away from me. You need to be prepared for all three eventualities.
The thing that has really struck me and come to the forefront here lately is that living in an urban environment, you're not safe. The majority of wildfires in the past have struck the wild and urban interface areas, people living in the outskirts of town, in the woods. But here we've had whole towns just burnt through. And I've always felt kind of comfortable living towards downtown Atascadero, but it can't happen here.
Yeah. You know, as an old fireman, Fred, and disaster planner, I'm always keeping aware of what's going on around me. I have an app on my phone that'll chirp at me if there's been a wildland dispatch in the area, and I always go and look, and part of it is curiosity. Oh, they're going to another fire up north. Or, as happened, I guess it's been 6 weeks ago, there was another fire in the riverbed in Paso Robles, the town I live in. And, okay, let's keep an eye on this. Let's listen to the dispatch. And then I noticed the aircraft are really loud directly over my house. So I step outside, and I noticed that they're actually opening the dump doors as they're going over my house, because the fire is only about 5 blocks away. So I told my wife, I think we may have to evacuate. And as I told her that, I stepped back outside as an engine went up the street next to me on their PA system saying to evacuate. Because we have prepared, because my wife has listened to me talk about this for years, according to our doorbell camera, 3 minutes after I told her that, we had ourselves, our disaster kits, our dog, our granddaughter who was visiting, and our medicines, and we were driving out our driveway. The fire stopped 3 blocks from my house, thankfully, because the air tankers only had to go as far as the Paso Airport to reload, that they stopped at 3 blocks from my house.
Yeah. Paul, knowing where you live, I mean, I'm thinking the nearest heavy vegetation towards you is a quarter of a mile, as a crow flies, almost a quarter of a mile away, or seemingly a quarter of a mile away. And you live in what we consider to be a typical suburban subdivision. It's not like you live in the middle of forest land in the mountains. I think that we've had to rethink a lot of this. I looked at pictures the other day as I was preparing for this program, looked at some aerials from some of the wiped out regions in Oregon, where there were apartment houses of hundreds of units of apartment houses that were just flattened. And these are, I suspect if I lived there, I would have thought this is way back away from all the trees and the forest land. Everything's going to be fine here. I don't need to prepare for this. Now I walk outside and look and see how close the trees are to my house and how close the trees across the street are to crossing over the right of way. And it gets our attention.
Yeah. The eye opener for me is when Napa burned. I mean, that was square miles of suburbia that every home burned. You know, maybe one house every few blocks now still standing, but pretty much everything burned. Every home, every business, everything burned.
Yeah, some technical things I'm curious to try and sort out a little bit. When they talk about the containment of a fire, let's say a fire is 30% contained, what are they really defining? What are you defining when we look at containment? Because the fire in Big Sur has been listed as being, you know, somewhat contained for quite a while, but it's still spreading. It's getting larger all the time. For the layman, how do we understand what that means?
Wildland fires are just open fires, right? You don't typically have a border on the fire unless you create it. And like on a structure fire, you've got a box. That's your containment area. Wildland, it's liable to go any direction. And basically, we just have to secure a line, typically not on the fire line, but on a place that's defensible, like a road. And depending on what percentage of that area has been contained is what we have. The box, the whole box, we'll create that on a map where we're going to hold this fire. And we start constructing lines or putting up areas with bulldozers, water, air tankers, or whatever that will draw a line. And whenever that is secure, we've got the fire out at that point. That's the percentage that we have contained. So if you have draw a circle and you have, you know, one third of the way around it, that's 30%.
And what people have to understand is contained versus the fire being out. You remember way back in the Las Palitas fire, which burned down to San Luis Obispo, the side of the fire towards San Luis was declared contained. And that night, the fire jumped bare earth. There was the width of 12 bulldozers. The fire jumped that line and ran into the city of San Luis. So contained is why there'll still be an evacuation on the other side of that containment line, because that's where they think they can hold it. But sometimes conditions suddenly change and you lose the containment. The fire jumps the line.
And we probably need to make sure that I want to remind all the listeners, if you're listening to the program, I would suggest you get a piece of pencil and paper out or pen and paper out, because Dan and Paul are going to give you, to some extent, a checklist of the things that you need to do to prepare to basically be able to leave. Paul was, you said 3 minutes, right? You were yeah, out the door in 3 minutes. My thought when we talked about this after the fire, you actually had implied to me that those seemed like a surprisingly long 3 minutes, because you thought you shouldn't have had to take that long. So what do you have as far as a containment kit I think you call it a go kit. Mm-hmm. And what does it need to include?
Okay, the easiest thing to do is think about, I may have to live off of what I can carry for the next, say, 3 days, which is the immediate plan. So you want to have water. You got to have water to drink or you die. That's the first thing you need. How much water do you need? Well, to stay alive, you need 16 ounces per person per day to stay alive. You're not comfortable. You're not clean. You're just alive. To be more comfortable, they say a gallon per person per day. So I have two go kits. I have the one if I have to leave in an instant, and that's got enough water for two people to stay alive for 3 days. Second to that, after water, the next thing you need is food. Well, there's two kinds of food. There's stay alive and something I might actually enjoy eating. So for the stay alive portion, they make a nice little non-perishable emergency food ration, just a little square block, coconut-based. It doesn't taste horrible, but you're probably not going to order it for dessert. And that little block will keep two people alive for 3 days. So that's in my immediate. The next thing you need is light. You want to be able to see, because if you're evacuating at night and it's dark and the power's out, you don't want to do all this great prep and then die trying to get to your car. So you need a flashlight. Suggestion is a small LED flashlight. The LED, the batteries will last a really long time. I also like the chemical lights, the ones you snap and shake and they glow. One, they don't go dead. They last for about 10 years if you don't use them. And they're a nice low-level light that's just a comfort light at night if you need it. But you can also see where you're going. The next thing is something to protect yourself, an emergency blanket. Emergency blanket's a tiny little thing. It's about the size of a man's wallet, but a thin one. And it'll do two things. It can be a blanket you can wrap yourself in to keep warm. You can also use it and jury-rig it against something to get you some shelter if it's raining out. Another thing is a first aid kit. Now, when you go and look to buy a disaster kit, they'll want to sell you a first aid kit that me or Dan might use because we were paramedics. We know how to do a lot of things. If you don't know how to use it, don't buy the $200 first aid kit. Get yourself some 4x4s and some gauze, some Band-Aids, some aspirin, something that you know how to use. But if you've got more training and more skill, then I carry a trauma bag. But that's because I know how to use it. Emergency contact information and emergency paperwork. Photocopy your driver's license. Photocopy the cover page off your insurance information. If you have a list of people to call in a disaster and it's not in your phone already, put that in your paperwork. Sometimes when you evacuate and you want to come back to your home, because they're going to allow residents only to return, you need to be able to show them who you are. So that photocopy of your driver's license might get you back in. Another one is medications. This is one of the things my wife grabbed while I was grabbing the Go Kit and the dog. She just cleared off our medicine cabinet. Any medicine you need to stay alive, you need to have enough in your kit to stay alive. A way to charge a cell phone is handy, even if it's just a cell phone charger, so that when you get someplace that has electricity, you can charge your phone. Don't forget babies, little kids, food and stuff for them, and don't forget your pets. I know my dog will eat whatever I give him if he's hungry enough, but I have a little fabric collapsible dog dish that is in the kit, and if I don't have time to grab dog food, he'll eat whatever I give him, but that gives him someplace to drink water easily. So that's the main things. Another nicest to have is a whistle, so that if you are stuck somewhere, you need to get help, you can blow the whistle. Some surgical masks, especially now in the time of COVID. And I keep all of it in a backpack. When Fukushima happened, the big earthquake and tsunami in Japan, people had to walk 15 miles to get to help because there was no roads. The roads were not passable. You don't need a fancy, pretty red backpack that says disaster. You can go to Goodwill and get a used backpack for a couple of bucks to put all this stuff in. You anything to add to that, Dan?
Well, I keep a bag with extra clothes ready to go. Just a small travel bag, extra pair of underwear, socks, all that. But definitely, on the immediate go kit, I would add cash. Make sure you've got some cash, because you never know where power is out and people can't use your credit card. Keys, you know, keys to your house and things that you might need. You mentioned the extra cell phone charger, like the battery pack, though, because you can't always, not always going to be able to find a place to plug it in. Possibly even, you know, solar type battery packs.
You know, on my Baker kit, I have a hand crank that's a flashlight, an emergency radio, and will also charge my phone, and it has a small solar panel on the top of it. It's a little bit larger in size, so I have it in my second kit, the one that has longer term supplies. And also, when you say cash, I recommend it be $1 bills. Because if you need that roll of toilet paper or that bottle of water somebody is selling and all you have is a 20, well, that's what it's going to cost you. So we actually, in all of our go kits, we also keep a small go kit in every vehicle. And in all of our go kits, we have $1 bills, a stack of them.
Yeah. Well, you bring up a particular point when you mentioned you have a different kit in your car. Is there a reason why you would not just have this always in your car?
Well, there's one in each vehicle, because who knows? Like right now, I am at home and my wife's not here. So she has the car and she has a kit in the car. I have another kit in the house and I have a kit in my pickup. And if we have time, we have that much more supplies. But the worst case is you're out in the car when it happens and you have the kit you have in your car. The best case is you find out, hey, we might have to evacuate tomorrow, and you're in your home and you can load lots of stuff into your vehicle.
My wife on regular occasion, when we're in the car, will say, look at your gas gauge and tell me what Paul Dees would say. Because one of the, this is filed away, because you and I talked about this and had a conversation after the Paradise fire. It's a tragedy. There's no way around talking about it. I wish we could just not talk about it. But there are people who died in the Paradise fire and other fires in Northern California a couple of years ago, because gas stations were not open or the lines were too long, and they were in cars with empty gas tanks. They could not get out. So the Paul Dees example that I've had now is, we don't go anywhere with it less than a half a tank of gas in our car, and if it's below a half a tank, we stop and fill it up before we get home. But yep. And really not occurred to me. I was mostly concerned about just making sure everything I had in there was in there and ready to go.
You know, we just talk about wildfire. Yeah, that's one reason, so that you always have enough gas to get away. But again, we can have more than wildfires here. We can have earthquakes. We can have severe storms. I spent a month working in New York City. I arrived there the day after Hurricane Sandy hit. And we're talking about the largest city in the United States, the largest group of people. Help was coming from everywhere in every direction. And there was no gas for 30 days. They wound up parking fire engines because they ran out of fuel. And there was none, and there was no way to get any. And again, that's not in little tiny slow county. That's New York City, and they couldn't get them enough fuel. So you got to be able to self-sustain for a while. If we have a big earthquake, we're not getting help right away. Help may be a long ways off. And even if the gas stations have gas, if they don't have backup power, they're not able to pump it to you. Yeah, so at least half a tank, Fred. Sharon is correct.
Yes, Sharon is always correct, but yes, but it's the Paul Dees doctrine at our house now. Real quick, I got a note from Christina, our producer, that said, Paul and Dan, if you can provide her with a list of emergency links, she can indeed put it on the website, so it'll go on at KCBX, so when the program is archived, people can get that information also. Okay, I forgot that she was able to do that. Yeah,
I was going to give out two of them verbally now, that people can write them down and then catch them later. And they're pretty simple. One is called ready.gov. Simple, ready.gov. And that's a federal website all about disaster preparedness. And one more local to us, readyforwildfire.org. That's readyforwildfire.org. Both of those will give you a list of what could be in a kit. Both of them will talk about having a plan. Both of them will give you information about how to be better prepared.
I just saw Sarah write them down, and Christina will make sure between Sarah and Christina, they'll end up on the website. Dan, one of the things that you and I have both lived in Atascadero, and I look out my back window and I realize I've got an acre of open land without a whole lot going on out there. Not a lot of vegetation, so it feels reasonably safe and okay from that standpoint. But then I think about the fact that fires jump streets and jump from tree to tree. So even when we're in a real, you know, suburban area, you mentioned earlier the concept of you live near downtown Atascadero, why should that be a big concern? Obviously it is. I think we lose track of the fact that a fire gets hot enough that the distance between two trees is not going to keep it from going anywhere.
And the wind is going to decrease that distance by a bunch. And that's what drives it through. You got the wind going, and sometimes a fire creates its own wind. It's like a blowtorch. And yes, you know, one of the other things that, you know, looking at around your house is the trees. Okay. Are there any dead limbs? Are they close to the house? You want to thin it out. Any other flammable products around your house. You know, they say you should have 5 feet of clear space around your house. I mean, just totally clear. Of course, we all have, you know, planters and stuff like that, but anything that's likely flammable, and then, you know, all the other items should be 30 feet away. And that's some of the things we can talk about is prepping your house ahead of the fire. And you have time to do that. And there's quite a bit to that. Looks like we're coming on the half hour.
Well, we've got plenty of time, so we'll just continue. You know, we jump into that right now, and we'll continue with it.
Yeah. Well,
what can you do to prepare your house specifically and the ground around it?
Think about anything that's flammable. Your wooden decks, and what can be act as kindling around it. You know, smaller objects that can catch fire, or things stored under the deck. So whatever you can do to slow the progression of fire. You know, the grass being cut, the dead limbs, wood moved away, but even your deck furniture. You know. You know, fire's coming in your area. Get all that furniture off the deck. Get the barbecue with the propane tank off the deck, 30 feet away from the house.
Bring up a good point. I mean, we all seem to have these propane devices for, you know, everything from a barbecue to now a propane pizza ovens, other, you know, propane heaters outside. I'm thinking about a 35 gallon or 35 pound propane tank sitting on my back porch. That's an accident waiting to happen anyway.
Yeah. And it's that propane tank, you know, won't leak instantly, but when it does catch fire, you know, when it gets get hot enough, it's going to be a major blast. The large propane tanks that feed your house, those can be shut off at the tank so that the lines leading to the house aren't susceptible.
Okay. We're going to take a break. We'll be back within a little bit. I have Paul Dees and Dan Pagali on the phone with us today, and we're looking at what we can do to prepare for disaster programs, because we are living in a tough time, and there are fires, as you know, everywhere. And we want to make sure, between fires and earthquakes and potential floods in some parts of the country, we're prepared to address those. So, Sarah, you've got it for a minute or so, and we'll be back with you shortly.
Thanks for tuning in for Central Coast Voices. If you have questions you want to have answered today, you can send them to us at voices@kcbx.org or call them into us at 805-549-8855.
We are back with you, and I'm glad we can be part of this program today for you. If you're not taking notes, you need to take notes. And as we reminded you, the information will get posted. When the program gets posted on the archives for KCBX, Christina, our producer, will arrange to either Christina or Sarah will get it on there so you can find the connections. And Paul and Dan will probably repeat them again towards the bottom of the hour. Dan, you were talking about preparedness. One of the things that I think we need to be concerned about is everybody knows, or everybody has a family member who believes they are invincible. I'm the guy that's going to go take the garden hose and get up on the roof of my house and just keep everything wet and life will be grand. How do we explain to people like that their life is more critical than property?
Yeah, I understand the desire to stay with the house and try to protect it. In some cases, that can work out, but in too many cases, it doesn't. And the big thing is, we don't want to be a part of the problem, because now firefighters have to worry about rescuing you. Best thing to do is get it as prepped as you can. Think about it ahead of time and be ready. Get your house ready to go. When you leave the house, you shouldn't lock the doors, because firefighters might need to make entry to put out a fire or to save your house. Leave the porch lights on. And the things we mentioned about getting it ready ahead of time by moving combustibles away, you could look at a lot of things that you could do now, because think about the embers that might get up into your attic. If there's some way to block any of those vents to the attic, like with plywood, that would be helpful. On your Spanish tile roofs, there's oftentimes open ends on those that where embers can fly in. Those are typically sealed up either with grout, or they make some metal pieces that fit inside. Think about whatever areas can catch embers. Standing on your roof with a hose is oftentimes futile, and oftentimes the water supply diminishes and your hose isn't worth a darn. And we've seen, like I mentioned earlier, we had a whole group of firefighters at their station, a bulldozer, and whatever water supply they had wasn't enough to save them and the building.
Yeah, Dan, let's go back to that minute. We were talking before the program. We were talking about some things that we wanted to make sure we covered. The Nacimiento Ferguson Road station that was believed to be, I guess, in a reasonably safe area for the Big Sur Ragged Point fire. Kind of turned the fire. Some of the firefighters there were injured. Can you explain? You or Paul explain what they did to? I mean, they were injured, but there were no fatalities. These guys got out, and it was a rather precarious situation. What method did they use to protect themselves? This isn't available to the general public, but I'd like to have an understanding of what firefighters do to protect themselves in what could be life-threatening situations like that.
You know, Fred, that situation where you had
a better understanding.
They had a fire engine, they had a dozer, they had all their knowledge, they had all their equipment, and they couldn't save their fire station. It's the first part. You with your garden hose going to do much good if they, with all those resources, couldn't save their fire station. The last resort on a wildland fire is what's called a fire shelter. Fire shelter is a thin aluminum pup tent. When you are trained on how to use these fire shelters, you have to deploy them a certain way. You are told when you're trained, if you ever have to deploy this, you are going to be injured. And there's a good chance you're going to die. They are truly the last resort. Everyone on that 12-person crew that deployed the fire shelter, it saved their lives. Everyone had some level of injury, burn injuries to their feet, to their hands, and there's one person still in critical condition in the hospital. It's a scary last resort to have to deploy a fire shelter. And again, these were professionals with the right equipment, with a building that had been prepped. They barely escaped with their lives, and the building was lost.
Probably the best example of why a non-professionally trained person is not going to protect their structure and risk their own life in the process. So your advice to have a kit packed and be prepared to get out and get out now is important. Sarah, I think, did you have a question from a caller?
We did. We had somebody that called in to our 805-549-8855 number. They're wondering what to do in case of an evacuation. How do you find out where you're supposed to go?
Good question, gentlemen.
Well, first thing you do is get in your vehicle and turn on the radio. This radio station you're listening to right now is one of the few stations in the area that still has human beings working the radio. Even if it's a show that they're getting from PBS, there's still people available that can break in and give you local emergency information. That's one place. Another place is, everybody, if you have not already done this, you should do it before this program is over. And that's go on your computer and go to SLO Sheriff and register your phone for reverse 911. That is how the sheriff's department will call you to say there's some kind of emergency. And if they have already selected a evacuation shelter, they will tell you that when they call you on the reverse 911.
Paul, let me interject for a second. This is not something to do when you're already planning to leave. This is something you can register for reverse 911 now, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
You go to slowsheriff.org/reverse_911 or just Google slow sheriff 911 or reverse 911. That worked for us. We got out so fast when we had to evacuate. We were already driving down the road when our phone rang telling us to evacuate. But if we hadn't been paying attention to the conditions, that's when we would have found out that we needed to evacuate.
Typically, how long are, I realize it varies from situation to situation, But I frankly don't have an understanding of how fast a wildland fire moves. I mean, are we talking about I've got 30 seconds to get out? I mean, you got out, Paul, in 3 minutes. Realistically, what do you feel like your real time window was, even though you didn't need any more than the 3 minutes?
Well, I was lucky. They stopped the fire 3 blocks from my house. But that fire went from some little start in the riverbed and burned through, destroyed 2 homes, and burned about 1/4 mile through town in less than 15 minutes. The fire up in Oregon that blew up the day before yesterday was burning at the rate of 4 acres a second. Let's sit in for a second. 4 acres a second is how fast that fire was spreading. Okay, that you're not going to outrun it. Hopefully it blasts past you while you're driving away in your car, because you're not going to outdrive it. When that wind gets going, the fire is going to move as fast as the wind is blowing.
So I want to interject a question, and there may not be a right answer because every situation will be somewhat different. What that sounds like to me is, if I'm in my vehicle and I'm able to keep moving and get out, I should keep moving. I shouldn't pull over to the side of the road and wait for the fire to blow by.
No, get out of town and keep going. And, you know, the sooner you leave, the less congestion on the road, the less chance you're going to get overrun by the fire. And have a plan today of 2 ways to get out of your neighborhood. One of those ways may be where the fire is, and you have to go the other way. You need to know when you get to the end of your street, now, do I turn right or do I turn left, depending on where the fire is. You have to have a plan. Otherwise, you're going to panic and potentially drive into the fire.
A lot of places in this area have only one way out. So Be well aware of that, and that's another reason for going early. Something else to mention to take with you these days is if you have a go bag of camping gear, because especially in the days of COVID, we don't know whether we're going to have a place to stay or evacuation center.
Yeah, and I know the Red Cross is now mostly using hotel rooms for people because of COVID, but if there's hotel rooms available. That's another thing. If you get out early, you can get a hotel room before they're all gone. Dan, I don't know how many times we can say get out early, right? When in doubt, leave.
Absolutely. You know, your belongings can be replaced in most cases, but your lives can't.
Yeah.
One of the things as I'm listening to you that occurred to me is that in some places there may be a question as to what is, if I don't know the route where the fire is coming from, or where, in the case of an earthquake, where there may already be landslides and things like that. Is it a good idea just to do one of two things, either consider going downhill, or consider heading towards the largest road? In the case of San Luis County, we're pretty lucky. We, between Highway 1 and Highway 101, pretty much everything dumps into a major highway. So is the buried in the back of my brain, do I need to basically think what I need to do is head towards Highway 101 because it's where the most likely open roadway is under any circumstances?
Yes, but with a plan B in your head, in case as you get in your car, you go, I see real heavy smoke between me and 101. Then I'm going to have to go the other way, whatever that other way is. And at 2 a.m, when you're in a panic, is not the time to think about what that other way is. It's the time to just go, okay, we're going to do plan B, and already know what that is.
That's why it's a good thing to plan ahead of, because people are creatures of habit, and we usually go the way we're used to.
Yep. You know, that holds true in all kinds of emergencies. You know, when there's a fire in a movie theater, the dead bodies are piled by the entrance door that everybody came in through. The survivors all went out the emergency exits that are in the front of the theater, because exactly. Everybody goes out the way they came in.
You go back by the road, you know, I guess.
So you need to know now what your plan is. Know where your kit is. Know what you're going to take with you. And all of this comes down to being awake. You know, we're in California. It's been hot. It's fire season anyway. Because there's so many fires, there's less firefighters out there to come help when it's needed. So there's a chance that fires are going to grow faster than they would previous years. So be aware. Think about what's going on. Oh, I hear sirens. What should I do? I guess maybe I shouldn't ignore it. I ought to take a look and see if that's near me. And if it is, leave before I'm told to.
Yeah. One of the things that we need to think about is there are a lot of people, especially during what's going on with COVID, there are people who are unemployed. There are people whose resources are limited. It sounds, as I'm trying to go over in my head, the list that you've put together, for a lot of people, well, water is not expensive. So having some bottled water available in your kit may be critical. Having some energy bars, if nothing else, is going to be critical. And paperwork is critical, I guess, when you can have it. So some of the things you're suggesting may be outside the financial reach for some people, but those things are critical. Sarah, you had another question or another caller?
We did. We just had Yolanda call in from Los Osos. She used our 805-549-8855 number, and she's asking a two-part question. First is, where should you purchase the condensed meals that, Paul, I think you suggested? And the second is, the small lots in Los Osos are usually surrounded by wooden fences, and wondering if this is a concern.
Well, I'll take where do you get the supplies. I like to buy local. The people I have found back when I buy my own, and also when I was buying them for the Red Cross kits, is there's a place in San Luis. It's right near the corner of Marsh and Hygera. It's called Camp Slow or Slow Camp and Pack. It's kind of a surplus store and a camping store. And I have found in there they have lots of the emergency water in these little envelopes that have a 5-year shelf life. They have the emergency food that has a 5-year shelf life. And they have enough turnover that their stuff is fresh. You can also find a lot of it in any hardware store. They all have a display rack of disaster supplies. And what was the second question?
Fences.
Yeah.
Say again?
Fences.
I'll answer the question about fences alongside your houses. And yes, they are potential spread for wildfire. They're typically not within 5 feet of a house, but I guess in Los Osos they could be. If you think about it, if you've got a gate attached to that fence that's up against the house, and you're not worried about animals leaving, of course you should be taking them with you, but open that gate so it's not attached to the house. In some cases, when we're out protecting homes in a wildfire and we see something like that, we'll knock the fence over if that's practical. We've been known to cut a deck off of a house because it was on fire. That could be a concern, and I don't think there's really anything that's going to make that fence fireproof. But
Dan, a question that comes to my mind is that if you have a choice as to what fence you use, there's a lot of what I would call prefab plastic fencing now, or recycled fencing now, that isn't going to survive a fire, but I think in most cases it's not going to burn like a exposed wood fence. It, I don't know if that's any benefit or not.
Yeah, that pretty much melts.
Yeah.
That plastic can catch fire, but I think it's going to be a pool on the ground before it's a danger.
Sarah, you had one another question?
Yes, another caller just called into the 805-549-8855 number, and they are suggesting that it's important for people to know that if you live in a stucco house, that it's very important to leave clear space between the home and the gardens or the surrounding fences and garden area.
You know, stucco is not going to burn as easy. A stucco house is going to have some of its own protection. And if your eaves are actually closed in and are stucco covered, that'll help even more. But all of that is a waste if you stacked your firewood against the side of your house. The stucco will work for so long, but eventually the heat can get through it. And what people don't understand, sometimes the reason you can have a concrete house, and if the fire is hot enough, the radiant heat in through the glass windows can set your furnishings inside the house on fire. You know, and if the fire is like that, your prep's going to be for naught. You're going to lose your house. But you want to give your house, just like yourself, every possible chance. You know, keep
it tack on to that about the windows. Open your curtains on something unless they're heavy drapes. Heavy drapes can help keep the heat out of the house. Move furniture away from the windows. Preferably, you know, dual pane glass will resist longer. But yeah, those are things that should be on some of the websites that we're going to attach to KCX to refer to. There's a lot of measures, a lot more measures you can take to help protect your house before you go.
You know, Fred, back to your question about expense of building a kit. As I mentioned, go to Goodwill and get a used backpack. Start out with water because that's what you need first to keep alive. Then go to emergency food and then on down the list. But people drink some kind of water as it is. If you're already buying bottled water, which I have other reasons I don't like, but if you buy those emergency water packets, they have a 5-year shelf life.
Oh,
and you're not carrying a bunch of stuff you have to throw away. But if nothing else, you have nothing, yeah, throw a bottle of water in there. The more prepared you can be, the better you are. Be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Paul, did you mention the Red Cross website?
No, I hadn't yet. But if you go to just redcross.org, they have links for other disaster prepared stuff. And they also sell kits and they sell hand crank radios and other disaster supplies.
Yeah. As I remind all of our guests and our listeners are used to my saying this, I want to make sure that I get out of the way in the last few minutes. Want to give you each a couple of minutes to make sure what you feel like we've missed or that we need to reiterate gets covered. Dan, I'll start with you. What do you want to make sure people don't forget?
One of the things that when preparing to leave the house is have emergency phone numbers and make sure that you have that all your family has the information they need in case you get separated. One of the things that I've heard that would make sense when you leave your house is to put a new greeting on your phone stating that you are evacuating and maybe where you're going and how to get a hold of you. That way, if someone is wondering about if your safety, they can, and they call your phone, cell phone, they've got that message on there. You may not be able to answer that phone. You may be out of a service area.
Good point. It may disappoint the person who's trying to sell me a new warranty for my car. But Paul, your thoughts?
The main thing is you need to prepare as if your life depends on it because it does. It really does. You need to take care of yourselves. You need to take care of others. You need to check on your friends. It all comes down to have a plan on how I'm getting out of here, a plan on where I'm going to meet. And I'll add to what Dan said about the emergency contact. If we have a large disaster like an earthquake, oftentimes you won't be able to call the person that lives across the street from you, but you can often call somebody out of the area. So in my family, which is all over the country, everybody on the West Coast calls my sister on the East Coast. Everybody on the East Coast calls me, and we'll do the connections to get people reconnected to each other. So have a plan, share the plan. And you know, if you have kids, what is great is teach them the plan and tell them to hold a surprise drill. Give them the power to say suddenly at 2 o'clock one afternoon, it's fire drill, and let them judge you on how well you got out of your house. It makes it a game for them. And you know what? They're going to do it too. Hopefully not at 2 a.m.
That's your parting shot, Paul. And hopefully not at 2 a.m.
Well, actually, my parting shot is to KCBX for having us on to talk about this, that it's, you know, really valuable. This kind of program is another reason why I listen to KCBX. And hopefully people will listen. And if they have questions, they can email the email address for the show, and Fred can forward it to me and Dan.
Yeah. And Christina just sent me a note saying that she's already added the websites to the link for the show. So when the link for the show goes up, it'll all be together and it's ready to roll from that standpoint. One quick question, and we've got a couple of seconds left. And that is, Paul, you did mention that about having water and a collapsible food bowl if you're going to take any pets with you. Obviously, you can't take the whole farm, but if you have a dog or a cat that you want to take with you, they'll eat anything. So it's a good way to understand that they want to come along too.
You know, and if you got half an hour to get ready, you can grab more stuff, including that full bag of dog food or cat food and their favorite dish and everything else. So like, that's my level two plan is I got time. I'm going to grab a lot more stuff. Level one plan is I'm just going to grab the go kit, the dog and the wife and go.
Great. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it. This has been a great program. Want to remind you folks that next week, Chris Kington Barker will be back here, and she's going to be talking with leaders from the Santa Barbara County Mental Wellness Program and the Community Action Commission of Santa Barbara County. And they're going to discuss how COVID-19's pandemic has impacted the African American community of Santa Barbara County. The conversation will include taking a look at both public and mental health hurdles, along with housing challenges that have affected that community in Santa Barbara County. That'll be the program next week. Want to remind you that Central Coast Voices is a project of Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo and KCBX Public Radio. Thank you to Sarah Lane for engineering for us today. She keeps us on our toes. You can reach us at voices@kcbx.org. And thanks to my guests today, Dan McCauley and Paul Dees. This is important information. We would like a day when we don't need to worry about this stuff anymore. But right now, the world we live in has many challenges, and disasters are ones that we just have to pay attention to. So I thank you very much for being willing to be on the program and talk about this. It's trying times for a lot of people, but the information we can share helps us all. Thank you for joining us. This has been Central Coast Voices. Next up is my favorite program, This American Life. Sarah, it's all yours.